Welcome, everybody. My name is Mark Boucher, the Library Director here at Lake Superior State University Library, and on behalf of all of the Library and Learning Commons staff, we welcome you to our first poetry series here in the library. And we have several other events going on that I just want to let you know about prior to us getting started. Tomorrow, October 12th at 2 p.m., Amelia Grace Brooks will give a lecture here in the library, followed by a reception in the art gallery. When you leave, I highly encourage you to take a look at the wonderful artwork that is in the gallery. Then October 13th at 4 p.m., Amelia's sister, our own Julie Barber, will give a poetry reading in the art gallery, I believe. Or maybe it'll be here. I don't know. We'll see. After that, we have this Friday, October 14th at 7 p.m. right here, a Michigan author, Patricia Maher, will be talking about writing. She is the author of two books, at least, the latest of which is Great Girls in Michigan History. And the following week, Thursday, October 20th, for the Scholars Series, we'll be bringing in University of Wisconsin Emeritus Professor of Mathematics, Gary Britton, who will be talking about mathematics in nature and the arts. That is next Thursday, the 20th. In fact, I'll give you this brochure. In fact, there are brochures around, so I encourage you to actually participate. So this evening, we are able to have the honor to bring in Michael Czarnecki, who, even though it's hard to spell his name, he's a great guy from Northern New York. He is not only a poet, he is a publisher, he is a memoirist, and an all-around good guy who has amazing stories to tell.
And a photographer,
yep, and a blogger and all of those other things. Michael has a really wonderful way of making accessible poems. We actually had an argument this afternoon about Frost and whether or not the poems were accessible enough, and he certainly put me in my place, and I was...
Nobody could do that.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, anyway, this is the first of what will hopefully be a regular semester event, and without any more introduction, I just want to bring up Michael Czarnecki.
Thank you. And again, I want to thank Mark and LSSU for hosting this event, having me back here again. It's good to be back. Every fall, this is two falls in a row since you've been here. Yeah, maybe next fall too, we'll see. How many of you have heard me read before? Yeah. Okay. There may be some poems you heard already, and that's okay. I always tell poets, you know, poets are so apologetic about that. You know, it's like, well, maybe you've heard this before, but, you know, when we go to concerts, you know, we love to hear the songs we know and all that. So
I've probably forgotten anyway.
And probably forgotten anyway. So it's all new, yeah. A good friend of mine, Steve Kaufman, wonderful writer, across genres. You know, he's written plays, memoirs, novels, short stories, poetry. And he and I go on a poetic trip for a few days every year up to the Adirondack Mountains. We've been doing this for 13 years. And we never stop talking the whole time. And I'm sure it's like the old stories we've heard, they're new because we tend to forget them. You know? So it's always new, always new. I want to start, as those of you who have heard me before know, that I always start with somebody else's work. I like to honor the tradition of poetry. And my favorite poet is Dao Chen. He's a Chinese poet from 1600 years ago, 400 A.D. And he was the first poet of farms and fields in China. And I'm actually going to read an introduction to a poem of his. It's a short prose piece. And I'm reading this because of a conversation Mark and I had earlier today. Not when I put him in his place. This is a different conversation, right? And it's called Preface to the Poem on the Peach Blossom Spring. And if you at all read Chinese poetry, you know, which, you know, there's, you know, amazing amounts of poetry and over, you know, millennia, Peach Blossom Spring has been referred to many times by other poets. And I'll read it, and you'll see Well, you, I think you'll make the connection, Mark, okay? And this is the note by the translator, Burton Watson. The following preface is one of the most famous and influential passages in all of Chinese prose. The poem itself, which simply repeats the account given in the preface, is of secondary interest and has not been translated. So he translated the introduction as opposed to the poem. And this is it. During the Taiyuan period, 376-397 of the Qin dynasty, there was a man of Wuling who caught fish for a living. See, here we go. Alan, right?
AJ.
Alan?
AJ.
AJ. Okay. There we go. See, I brought fish in immediately. Okay. There was a man who caught fish for a living. Once he was making his way up a valley stream and had lost track of how far he had gone, when he suddenly came upon a forest of peach trees in bloom. For several hundred paces on either bank of the stream, there were no other trees to be seen, but fragrant grasses, fresh and beautiful, and falling petals whirling all around. The fisherman, astonished at such a sight, pushed ahead, hoping to see what lay beyond the forest. Where the forest ended, there was a spring that fed the stream, and beyond that, a hill. The hill had a small opening in it, from which there seemed to come a gleam of light. Abandoning his boat, the fisherman went through the opening. At first, it was very narrow, with barely room for a person to pass. But after he had gone 20 or 30 paces, it suddenly opened out, and he could see clearly. A plain stretched before him, broad and flat, with houses and sheds dotting it, and rich fields, pretty ponds, and mulberry and bamboo around them. Paths ran north and south, east and west, across the fields, and chickens and dogs could be heard from farm to farm. The men and women who passed back and forth in the midst, sowing and tilling the fields, were all dressed just like any other people, and from white-haired elders to youngsters with their hair unbound, everyone seemed carefree and happy. The people, seeing the fishermen, were greatly startled and asked where he had come from. When he had answered all their questions, they invited him to return with them to their home, where they set out wine and killed a chicken to prepare a meal. As soon as the others in the village heard of his arrival, they all came to greet him. They told him that some generations in the past, their people had fled from the troubled times of the Qin dynasty and had come with their wives and children and fellow villagers to this faraway place. They had never ventured out into the world again, and hence in time had come to be completely cut off from other people. They asked him what dynasty was ruling at present. They had not even heard of the Han dynasty, to say nothing of the Wei and Qin dynasties that succeeded it. The fisherman replied to each of their questions to the best of his knowledge, and everyone sighed with wonder. The other villagers invited the fisherman to visit their homes as well, each setting out wine and food for him. Thus he remained for several days before taking his leave. One of the villagers said to him, "I trust you won't tell the people on the outside about this." After the fisherman had made his way out of the place, he found his boat and followed the route he had taken earlier, taking care to note the places that he passed. When he reached the prefectural town, he went to call the governor and report what had happened. The governor immediately dispatched men to go with him to look for the place, but though he tried to locate the spots that he had taken note of earlier, in the end, he became confused and could not find the way again. Lu Tzu-chi of Nanyang, a gentleman recluse of lofty ideals, heard the story and began delightedly making plans to go there. But before he could carry them out, he fell sick and died. Since then, there have been no more seekers of the ford. That's the Peach Blossom Spring, the introduction. And Seekers of the Ford is a Confucian phrase where he sent somebody out, one of his disciples, to find where the ford was to cross the river. So, and that's been referred to, like I said, numerous times over the centuries by other poets. And that Peach Blossom Spring is that idyllic place where everything is just beautiful and you can't find it, you know? Yeah, you can't find it. So, I always like to follow that first piece or a Dao Chan poem with a poem of mine called For the Echo of What Has Passed. Dao Chan would understand. I sit drinking wine, chanting poems, dreaming of mountains. Bills pile high at the door, white hairs infiltrate my beard. Daughter approaches womanhood, young son no longer crawls. Late autumn, already snow has covered the ground. Sipping wine, I shiver as a cool breeze caresses me from behind. Autumn, it's that time of, you know, it's my favorite season, but it's also that time, you know, the realization of the passing of time, you know, and that, yeah. And one other poem I like to recite too, and then I'll move into some newer stuff. If you come knocking, and I mentioned Ryokan here. He's a Japanese Zen Buddhist monk poet from the 19th century. Daughter sleeping, wife soaking in tub. I sip one more glass of wine, read Zen poems of Ryokan. Outside, the night sky darkens, Venus sets low in the west. If you come knocking at my door, be prepared to sit in silence. Has anyone been noticing Venus in the western sky at night and low in the west?
Sorry, but paying too much attention to that.
Venus, and then up above is Saturn and Mars. And in the morning sky now, if you have a clear horizon to the east, Jupiter and Mercury. No, is it Jupiter and Mercury? I think Jupiter and Mercury are visible. So I like to watch the stars and the changes and all that. I want to read a few spontaneous poems. I'm going to read a few more afterwards, too. But on the table there, there's a card that has my contact info. There's a notebook to leave your name and email if you want to be put on my list. I send out these journal entries, email every once in a while. And there are books available for sale. And one of the things I've been doing, Chris mentioned my photography, and she knows about it because every day I post a new photo on Facebook. And also I write a new spontaneous poem. And I wrote just in the moment, no editing, changing, or anything, just like that. So I want to read just a few of those that aren't in a book. I've got a book of some of them. These are more recent ones. And I never title them. They're just dated and numbered. And you don't need to know the date and numbers. So simple, this life. We complicate it so. Elevate trivialities to heights undeserved. Worry about happenings that haven't happened. Hold tight to past regrets. Impossible to change. There is this one thing, this one moment of life. Now, just now. So simple. You were talking about the weather and how warm it's been and that. I live upstate New York, 30 miles north of Corning. If anyone knows New York State, north of Corning in the hills and up on a hilltop and there's 50 acres of land and Amish neighbors and very rural, and a lot of my poems come from there. And here's a spontaneous one. I'm going to give you the date on this one, March 10th. Buckets taken down, spiles pulled from trees, last of sap boiling on stove. This maple season started so early. Already peepers sing, spring beauty leaves poke up above brown duff. Garlic sprouts in garden, ice out from pond, all too soon, too soon. That's something I think we're going to have to get used to, you know. I mean, sugaring, you know, I tap maple trees, and, you know, we're done March 10th. Many years you don't tap till March, you know. I tap trees in January this year. You know, it's just like
my friends do. They do it in with snow still on the ground.
Yeah.
They do it before March.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and look, the fall is lasting, you know, longer and longer. I want to read a few spontaneous poems from a spring tour that I took. This spring, I was on a six-week tour also. I headed south from home, Virginia, Florida, then across the south, New Orleans, or right in New Orleans area, and then all the way out to California and Oregon. And these are some spontaneous poems from that trip, and I'll be writing some spontaneous poems from this trip, too, you know, which I did last night already. You know, I don't know if you saw it, Mark. No? Well, I mentioned, not you specifically, but, you know. Conversation, meaningful. Literary life, spiritual life, life in Iraq, life in America, stories told from here, from there, three generations under one roof, night barbecue, whiskey on rocks, one more vibrant experience on Poetic Road. And that was a writer friend I met 5 years ago. We connected again this spring. She's an Iraqi woman, wonderful, powerful writer. Living in Michigan, and her family, they're Chaldean Iraqis, Christian Iraqis, and they live near Detroit, and in their neighborhood, they have, her husband was telling me, if we have a big family gathering of all the relatives who live here, the cousins, aunts, uncles, we'd have 150 people here, you know, so a whole lot of relatives all in that community, you know. Some tangible moments, pine cones, seashells, small piece of driftwood, three tiny agates, collected during spring poetic journey, rest on my desk. Intangible mementos rest elsewhere. Okay, and these are two people experiences I had. I drive an old 94 Honda Accord station wagon. I always drive old cars, right?
How many miles a year do you put on that car?
I don't know. I try not to keep track of how many miles per year. A lot. I mean, this will be two cross-country trips this year, you know, plus all the other, you know, smaller ones. So this was out in Southern California. I was getting gas, filling up. Filling old beat car, Route 66 gas station. A Latino walks over. Ah, from New York. I tell him, yes, a long way from home. A poet on a poetic tour. A poet? Yes, I give readings. People pay you for that? Yes, and I sell books. This is what I do for my work. Poor dollars-wise, rich life-wise. Ah, yes, spirit. You lift people up. Good, good. We shake hands. He says, Vaya con Dios. Do you know what that means?
Goodbye.
Tell me.
God be with you.
Travel with God. I love being on the road, you know, experiences like that. Okay, here we go. Here's the giveaway. Here's the giveaway. Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. Who can tell me who that is? First one to tell me gets a free book. What did you say? You get a free book. Wow, that didn't take long at all. Whoa. And that was even a soft voice.
I was going to say Harrison Ford.
Well, here, you want to pass that book back? Okay. And what's your name?
Allie.
Allie, okay. So anyway, this poem has to do with this shirt, okay? And this happened, this is the poem I was telling you about, Mark, okay? This happened in Portland, Oregon this spring. And was walking through a park, heading back to the car, and on this bench to the side were these three African-American, two older guys and a woman, maybe 25, 30, sitting there. So I'm walking by, okay. Walking through Small Park, Portland, Oregon, three people on bench, African-American, two guys, one woman. Who's that on your shirt? Walt Whitman. No response. Then the woman says, a white motherfucker. I tell him, he's a poet. I'm a poet. Tell us the poem, one guy says. I recite A Short Winter Hike. Walking knee-deep through unbroken snow, wind howls, flakes fall. Soon, even my tracks will disappear. Cool, cool. Then the woman says, can I read you a poem? Then reads three poems from a handwritten journal, one about a butterfly, one about dealing with pain, one about her baby. There are poems. There are poets everywhere. And that was, you know, like a long time ago, after the he's a white motherfucker, I would have just kept walking, you know? But yeah, you know, no, he's a poet. You know, I'm a poet. And then, you know, again, those wonderful exchanges like that. Okay, I mentioned Oregon. I've got to go to 20 Days on Route 20. This is a book about traveling across America. It's written in Haibun, and Haibun is a Japanese form that combines condensed prose and haiku. Matsuo Basho, the haiku master from 17th century Japan, he took walking pilgrimages and wrote about them in Haibun. And I read that form back in the 70s and loved it, but I never used it till I went on this journey in 1996. And I just want to read one or two little passages from here. And this book changed my life. The journey changed my life, I should say. That was the first time I went cross-country as a poet. You know, I maybe only had 7 or 8 readings. I didn't have enough money to do the trip. I was hoping, I only had 2 little books out then. I was hoping I'd sell enough books and be able to make the trip. And the second night out, I bartered for a room. I couldn't afford motels or anything. And I was emailing every day back an article to our local paper. They were paying me $25 an article. And every day I had to email it. So this was before laptops. And then I had my Mac Classic. Remember the Mac Classic? You could carry them around, you know, with the external modem and all the wires and the phone plugs. And I would, you know, I remember going to a pool hall one time. Hey, could I maybe plug into your phone line and send an email? It's like, boy, it was so hard back then. And anyway, the first night I did that at a library, slept in the car. Second night, I was grabbing a little bite to eat, a little diner, and it was a motel and diner. And I had this idea to maybe, I went up to the owner, I said, look, I'm doing this trip across America, I'm going to write a book about it, and 20's the longest road, Boston, Oregon, you know, the longest highway in America, and if you give me a free room for the night, I'll acknowledge you on the acknowledgments page of the book. And then when the book comes out, I'll give you enough books to cover the cost of the room. He goes, sure, why not? So, wow, you know, that was easy. You know? So there's, you know, on the acknowledgments page, Casey's Corner Restaurant and Motel, Prairie Hotel, Westerner Motel, you know, Conklin's Guest House. And I bartered all the way across the country, you know, at times, not always. So let me just read 2 sections here. I never went west until I did this trip. I always wondered, when will I be in the West? You know, and that mythic West. And I thought maybe when I crossed the Mississippi River, but no. Maybe when I crossed the Missouri. Crossed the Missouri, it looked like back home, hills and dairy farms. And then after you get halfway or so into Nebraska, the sandhills start. And that's where the West really began on Route 20. And this was from there. I took a long hike at Fort Robinson. It's right in very western, northwestern Nebraska. I took a long hike while at Fort, and there's a couple of haiku here and then the prose. I took a long hike while at Fort Robinson State Park. The region was devastated by a forest fire in 1989. Charred trees, some still standing, give the area a very eerie look. It was good to get out on my feet. I sat under a blowout, and that's where the wind had blown out the sandstone like and, you know, erosion, and so you got this little mini cave sort of like. In the cool shade of exposed sand and rock at midday, sunny, hot, upper 70s. In shade of sandstone, early fall like midsummer, crickets, don't be fooled. While sitting at the blowout, I discovered 2 different types of cactus, only a few inches high, but very numerous. cactus at my feet, reaching to touch needles sharp, heartache long ago. For a few brief moments, thoughts of that first person I fell in love with all those many years ago. What if she were here now? What would that be like? Some memories, desires, sweet heartaches linger forever. And then let me just tell you one story. It's written in the book, but let me just tell you the story, I guess. Oregon, going back to Oregon again. I was in Boise, Idaho. I gave a reading there at the Log Cabin Literary Center, and the Idaho Press Club was having dinner ahead of time. They invited me to come, and so I'm sitting outside, beautiful October night, evening, and they corrected my speech twice within 5 minutes. One, I was saying Boise, and they said it's Boise, okay. But they said, more importantly, tomorrow when you cross the border, do not say Oregon in Oregon. I go, what? You're saying Oregon. They do not like you to say Oregon in Oregon. Okay. So the next day, and you know, I don't have enough money to get home at this point. I've got one reading left in Oregon. So the next day, I'm in Oregon, and within 10 minutes, the siren and the lights. I get pulled over, and I think, what? You know, I can't afford a ticket. And the officer comes up to my window. I said, yeah, officer, why'd you stop me? I wasn't speeding or anything. He goes, no, you weren't speeding, but you don't have any stickers on your license plate. I go, I'm from New York. The stickers are up here on the windshield. Oh, well, let me see your license and registration. So I give him my license and registration. 10 minutes he's in his car. I think, what? I'm trying to write in my journal. I think, what's he doing? You know? And he comes back to the window. And he hands me my license and says, quote, again, this is in the book, well, Michael, I can't write you up for anything, so I'm just going to have to give you a verbal warning. I look at him, I go, a verbal warning for what? I haven't done anything wrong. I know, but I still have to warn you. And I love to understand things, right? But I knew. He's giving me my license back. He's letting me go. You know, I don't want to get arrested for refusing the unreasonable reasoning of an officer or something, you know. And when I got to Corvallis, that's where my last reading was, I told them that story. And they said, that's Redneck, Oregon, and they had to stop you. You have long hair. You've got an old beat car and a New York State license plate. They had to stop you. So that was so fun. One other quick story. This is the other fishing thing, okay? I did that journey in 96 in fall. 2010, I was planning a 28-day trip in spring. After I finished the first one, I knew I wanted to go in spring sometime, seeing spring across America on Route 20. And I started out in 2010. It was a 28-day trip. I had 20 readings booked this time over 28 days. And I got 10 days into the trip, and we had a medical emergency back home. I had to cancel the trip at that point. A year later, though, I continued right at the same day, a year later, and continued the journey. But I was in Massachusetts, and this is for you again, okay? Here's the fishing thing. I'm in Massachusetts along the Westfield River, and I'm driving along, and there's a guy stopped, you know, with his car. He's got the back trunk open. He's got his waders on and the fishing equipment. So I had to stop, talk to him, right? And so we got talking about, you know, fishing. He's going for trout there in the Westfield River. And so as we're talking, I tell him, you know, Route 20, I tell everybody this, you know, Route 20 is the longest road in America. I didn't know that. I said, yeah, it goes from Boston, Oregon, over 3,200 miles. And this is how he responded. He was a fisherman, right? I go, yeah, and it's over 3,200 miles. And he looks at me and he says, that'd be too much fishing for me. That was it. Just totally fishing.
Too much.
Too much, he said. That'd be too much fishing for me. Now, somebody told me it wouldn't be for you. Too much fishing. To never fish too much. Yeah. And one last thing about Route 20, this book. I'm real excited about it. I met somebody a year and a half ago, and she's finishing up right now. We've corresponded for a long time, and this year her main project was to write a film script for this book, based off of this book. So she's getting close to being done with it. And she knows who she would love to approach with it. And I don't know movies, you know, and actors and all that, so I had to look him up after she told me. But she said, you know who I think would really be interested in this is James Franco. So it's like, okay, go for it. You know, go for it. So, okay, I want to read a few haiku. Anyone here write haiku?
I've written tankas before.
Tankas, okay. Yeah, tanka is haiku plus two more seven syllables, basically. Yeah. Two more seven-syllable lines. Here's a few autumn haiku, just since we're in autumn. No, that's winter. One second. This is a book of haiku, Morning Mist. There's over 400 haiku in here, divided by seasons. And then there's some journey haiku, haiku from Mississippi River. I traveled from where it starts all the way down to the Delta. Another haiku series from Route 2, which is the northern route across America, all the way to Washington. And, well, here's a few autumn haiku. And again, three lines, 17 syllables, traditionally, nature connection. And the ideal haiku is a moment of enlightenment, which rarely happens, you know, rarely happens. But the ideal haiku is an aha moment that your life has changed somehow. And on the other end, haiku could be a beautiful little postcard in words, you know. Brown oak leaves hang on, acorns lie on ground below, father, son, pass by. These ancient mountains hold so many memories somewhere deep inside. In dim lantern light, old friends quietly converse, raindrops on window. Two thirty AM, large halo around full moon, restless night of sleep. In woodland outhouse, sun slants in through slabwood slats, shines upon my face. Standing by wood stove, peering into dark window, weathered face peers back. Distant memories surface when least expected, clear, crisp autumn air. First dusting of snow covers plants still in garden, catches me off guard. Far down in valley, miles from where I sit in field, tail lights of car. And that's home. And then one final fall one of my favorite ones. This is in Iowa. Red truck full of corn passes by on Highway 4. My car full of poems. I like that one. Full of poems. Any questions?
I'm just curious, how many states have you gone through doing this?
Well, interesting you ask that. 3 years ago, in 2013, I went on a 14-week tour called Poems Across America, and I gave a reading in each of the 48 lower states. And that was an amazing journey, 14 weeks, and just, you know, that changed my life a bit too. You know, it was just, I stayed with friends I hadn't seen for about 30 years. One I've been back in touch with, visiting five times since. There's communities I've gone back to numerous times, you know, Winchester, Virginia, Angola, Indiana, wonderful places. And that trip was just, Okay, here's a prose poem called Miracle. And this is a book, Never Stop Asking for Poems. It's a collection of 40 years of poetry. You know, some chapbooks that are out of print, some poems in there, and various other ones. This is a prose poem, Miracle. Let me tell you about this miracle. It occurred right here by our drive. You see, we walk up and down it every day, day in, day out, over a few years now, through snow and ice, rain and mud. We see flowers in their season and birds the year long through. Then one day, after 1,000 trips back and forth, out of 1,000 trips back and forth, out of nowhere appears this walnut tree, 20 feet tall, just 10 feet from the drive. Just like that, there it was, 20 feet tall overnight. Poof! After all that walking by, I'm sure we would have seen it before if it had been there. A tree, 20 feet overnight. Imagine that, a miracle with my own eyes. John Burroughs, the naturalist, he said, if you want to see something new, walk the same path you walked yesterday. I love that, you know. Or walk the same path you've been walking for years, and maybe you'll see something new, you know. Okay, a couple of bird poems. I think in here. Maybe it's in the other. Oh, I know where it is. Sorry, it's in here. Kinglet Crossing. Anyone familiar with kinglets? Little kinglets? Yeah, they're small warbler-sized birds, and they pass through our area. They don't stay. They don't nest in our area. They just pass through. And here it is. And I get into birds and flowers and all that stuff. Kinglet Crossing. And they continually move, you know, they never stand still. And I tried to capture that with this. Kinglet Crossing. Between stands of hemlock and pine, a 20-foot break, a few bare deciduous trees, and dozens of kinglets flitting about tree to tree, buzzing, 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 never perching, but moving through wave after wave from pine to maple to ash, trunk to branch to twig, continually on and on with no stop, 20 minutes, golden crown, ruby crown, pulsating across this clearing in migration between conifer woods, crossing paths as I stand watch on my migration to somewhere further on. And let me recite this. Those of you who are here have heard me before, I'm sure you've heard this poem. Chickadees, you know, how many of you have fed chickadees by hand? Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Peanut butter.
I do the sunflower seeds. It's not as sticky, you know. And I went out to feed them by hand one time and had a sudden thought to do it differently. So this is about that experience. It's called Seeing Eye to Eye with the Chickadee. I know it's just for food you come. That's okay. It all gets down to food anyway, one way or another. Yet when I tip back my head, lay a few seeds in my beard, hear you call, dee-dee, dee-dee, and flutter just above my eyes, feel your feet grasp my beard as you peck down for a seed, then fly off to a nearby tree to eat, and return again and again. I think maybe there's something more than just a few black oil sunflower seeds between us. Who knows? Hey, come spring, I'll let you build a nest with my hair, if you'd like. That was so cool, you know, just like...
And fight over me.
Fight over you?
Yes.
Like, no, they were fighting over the food. That's
they
what
were
they
were fighting over.
Who would get to you and get to that food? It all gets down to food, you know?
Yep.
It's all food. Let me read a few poems. This is a collection of some of the spontaneous poems. I think I'm up to maybe tonight is my 700th daily spontaneous poem on Facebook. So, yeah, I think so. Gee, that's almost 2 years of doing that. And photos, I'm up to, it's getting close to 1,300, I think, daily photos. It's over 1,200. So earlier on, I collected some in a book called Wild Voices Come When They Will. And so, yeah, let me read a few of these. And again, these are spontaneous, just in the moment, not rewritten whatsoever. This is how it comes out. This is how it gets put up there. As moon approaches full, shadows become stronger. Stars grow a little dimmer. My wanderlust more intense. We're approaching full Sunday, and I'm going to be, I believe, the plan is to be camping in the Badlands of North Dakota this weekend. So if it's clear, that'll be a wonderful place to see the moonrise. Yeah. As my bowl of soup cools, I think how if you were here, you'd love this homemade concoction. Spicy shrimp noodle, no recipe followed. Garlic, onion, hot pepper, sweet pepper, soy sauce, vegetarian oyster sauce, wild caught Alaskan shrimp, Asian noodles, straw mushrooms, liberal dashes of chili oil. No one here would have it with me. No one here caring for hot, spicy foods. I cherish each tingly, tasty spoonful. Wish there weren't so many miles between us. You really would have loved it. And she was very disappointed that she was so far away. Nine months since visiting. And this is written, I mentioned earlier about the 48-state tour I did where I connected with two friends from 30 years ago. And this was one of them. And like I said, I've been back five times connecting. 9 months since visiting, words flowed as if continuing conversation started yesterday. Distance irrelevant, apartness irrelevant. What does time matter when minds connect, when hearts connect? This friendship relevant beyond time, beyond space. And I mentioned that 48-state tour changed me, you know. And I'm sure I talked about this last year, but I have a triangle foundation that holds me up. And I've known this for a few decades. And it's a fluid triangle in terms of the lengths of the sides. They vary often. And one side is creativity, which is for me words, and maybe photographs now, Chris, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you.
His photographs are poems in and of themselves.
Thank you. So one side's creativity, another side's the natural world, and the third side is relationships, people. And I try to aim for equilateral, you know, keep it all in balance. And always one side's short, you know. Sometimes I'm too much the hermit. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm not outdoors enough. Even where I live, I just don't get out enough. Often it's been the people side over the years. And when I came back from that 48-state tour, 14 weeks, you know, I arrived home on my birthday. That was the final reading, the 48th reading on my birthday. And over winter, November 17th, this trip I'm coming home the day before my birthday, so... But over the winter, I reflected on the journey, and I realized the most important side of the triangle for me was the people side, was the relationships. And that was 3 years ago. And if anything, that's even more important now, it seems. You know, that's just, I've really been putting a lot of emphasis into that. And I made a list the other day, a couple of weeks ago. You know how time goes. The other day, yeah, that was 2 months ago. You know, it's like... I was thinking again about people, and I'm a list person, not you know, overly list, but I've learned to keep lists. Like before I go on a journey, I've got two different lists I can print out off my computer, whether I'm camping or not camping, you know, but everything's on there, and I don't forget anything anymore, you know. It's like, yes, I finally learned. But I sat down, I just had this thought, I started making a list of people who are close to me, and as I was doing that, and I've always had a strict definition of friendship. I've had a lot of acquaintances, not necessarily a lot of friends over the years. But I started making that list, and I thought, well, what about people I know who I want to get to know better? So that became another list. And then there was a middle list. And these are people who are good acquaintances, but probably it's not going to go beyond that. You know, it's just, and it was interesting to me, making this list, I think there was like 39 names on it, you know. And the biggest list was actually that third list of people I know now I want to get to know deeper. I love the word delving, to delve into something, you know. And so that it was interesting that that third list was the longest of the three. So I'm putting a lot of energy toward that. Okay. Here's another one. First time seeing each other in over 35 years. So many memories come flooding in so many decades ago. Meanwhile, young children's energy permeates through house. Excitement vibrates in air. That has no room for old thoughts. That was a totally different friend I just saw last year for the first time in 35 years. And she was actually taking care of her grandkids. So that was the young energy there, you know. Okay, just a few more from here. Tonight, no jazz, classical. Instead, Love and Spoonful, Grassroots, P.F. Sloan. Anyone know P.F. Sloan? Do I have to tell that story too? After the poem. I could do a whole program on P.F. Sloan, seriously. I won't, but I could. Okay, tonight, no jazz, classical. Instead, Love and Spoonful, Grassroots, P.F. Sloan, transporting me back nearly five decades, innocent teenage years. Songs bring a smile. Memories bring a smile. First relationship, 2 years, then splitting. Heartache, long gone. Longing for, long gone. Now just pleasant recall. Songs, innocence, my innocence, our innocence, never repeated. A one-time experience, returning in mind, like lyrics to old songs, remembered forever. And that was the person, same person referred to with the cactus and Nebraska there, the sandhills. And actually, I'm going to shift. And here's another poem that has to do with that same person. How many of you, my favorite musician, Van Morrison. How many of you really like him? He just released a new album just like a few weeks ago, and it's wonderful. Maybe the best in years, actually. You know, it's like, wow. And what I like about him, he's an artist. He does what he does, and it's he can't be limited. He can't be, just, you know, I'm not a country. I'm not a rock and roll. I'm not, you know. And yeah, he does what he wants to do. He's an artist, you know. And he's explored so many different paths over the years, too. You know, the spiritual path, the relationships, all that. So anyway, anyone know the song Ballerina by Van Morrison? It's on a classic, one of the top 10 albums of all time, Astral Weeks. And so anyway, I refer to that. I'm not going to sing the parts. I'm just going to say them, okay? Listening to Van's Ballerina for Margaret takes me back, takes me way back. And I'm standing in your doorway, and I'm mumbling, and I can't remember the last thing that I said. That's Van. What was that last thing I said that last time we saw each other so many years, miles away? I mumble memories words, stumble on what was then, recall scenes decades old. Late night in your doorway, parents inside, a soft kiss, sauntering away, thumbing home. A long hour's talk, sitting behind grocery store, should have been working. Iroquois Wildlife Refuge, holding you close, tight. Sudden birds fly by. Niagara Falls, wandering paths out of sight. Hands all over each other. Sitting on living room floor, vinyl record on turntable, talking of splitting up. And if somebody, this is Van again, and if somebody, not just anybody, wanted to get close to you, for instance, me, baby, take me back. Take me way back. And
tell us about that name.
Oh, what name? T.F. Sloan. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Just one last comment, though. Margaret and I still get together. It's been, you know, since the late 60s, you know. It's like, it's so nice, you know, a couple times a year. And P.F. Sloan, he was a singer-songwriter, mainly a songwriter back in the 60s. Wrote a lot of songs everybody knows. I'll get to that in a second. He wanted to be a performer, but he was controlled by the business. He was a songwriter. He was hired when he was 15 to start writing songs. And he wrote Let Me Be by the Turtles, if you know that song, You Baby by the Turtles, A Must to Avoid, Herman's Hermits, I Found a Girl, Jan and Dean, Secret Agent Man. The most famous song he wrote, Eve of Destruction. He wrote Eve of Destruction. And he was an amazing songwriter, and he really got persecuted. He wanted to go perform. Do you remember the Grassroots? And they did a song called Where Were You When I Needed You? Where Were You When... That was their first hit, right? I could go on. I shouldn't. Yeah. Look up P.F. Sloan, okay? Look up P.F. Sloan. He just died this past year. And he had disappeared for a long time. One other just little thing, but look him up, seriously. Jimmy Webb. Some of you know Jimmy Webb, wonderful songwriter, Up, Up and Away, just a whole lot of songs, you know?
Before my time.
But you could still listen to them, though. But Jimmy Webb, I was hitchhiking, my hitchhiking years. Sloan came out with two albums, then he disappeared, then he came out with a third album, disappeared, and that was 67. In 1972, or 71 or 2, I'm hitchhiking. I stopped at a diner to get coffee and a piece of pie, and I'm looking at the jukebox, on the counter, and there's a song by the Association. I can't remember what the A side was, but the B side was called P.F. Sloan. I go, this can't be a coincidence, right? So I put a quarter in and played it three times, right? And it's like, where have you gone, P.F. Sloan? I've been searching. He turned the corner all alone, you know? It's like, whoa, this is weird. And what was interesting, and then he came out with an album, and nobody ever heard these albums, you know? They never got promoted in that. But years later, he sort of resurfaced. An editor of a music magazine, I forgot what it was, but wrote an article about Jimmy Webb. He did an interview with Jimmy Webb. And in the interview, he asked Jimmy Webb, and this is an editor of a music magazine, right? I think Goldmine, maybe, or something like that. It was a paper like it. And he said, he asked Jimmy Webb, now, how did you come up with the idea for this P.F. Sloan character? He goes, what do you mean, come up with this idea? Jimmy Webb, he was my idol, man. He got persecuted for us. You know, he paved the way for us. What do you mean, making him up? And this editor didn't even know who Sloan was. A few years later, they dug Sloan up out of the bushes, you know. And Sloan talked, he was broke. He goes, I was begging money for food, and I heard that song over a speaker. Where have you gone, P.F. Sloan?
Oh, my gosh.
He goes, you talk about, cosmic comedies, And so P.F. Sloan, look him up, okay? Where are we at time-wise? Should wrap it up here? Probably in a few minutes, yeah, a few minutes. There's so much I would like to read. It's too much. I've written too much. I got to stop writing, Gotta stop writing. fat chance, exactly. Yeah. I want to read just a few books. In the Spirit of Tao Chen is a book, five poets: myself, David Budbill, Sam Hamill, Antler, and Charlie Rossiter, who edited this book. And we're all poets, and there's many others who've been influenced by Tao Chen. Okay. And in fact, I want to read a poem in tribute of David Budbill, who just died 2 months ago. Wonderful poet from the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. And yeah, if I could read one poem of his. Incident. And David moved to, he and his wife in the 60s moved to Northeast Vermont, bought a farm, and lived there till 2 years ago. And they had to leave, and it's too much to stay there. And they moved into Montpelier, and he just passed away, just like I said, a couple of months ago, I think. He had some rare form of Parkinson's disease, very rare form of it. Anyway, this is called Incident. 40 years ago, when I came to Jodavine Mountain, I put away my date book. Days and months flowed by like the river. I followed a calendar no smaller than the seasons. Then one gray and wet November day, on a high plateau where open fields stretched away on both sides of the road, while I drove a tractor and wagon down off Jodavine Mountain, something compelled me to stop and wait. After a while, a man climbed out of my chest and down off the tractor. He straightened his tie, picked up his briefcase, looked at me quizzically, nodded, smiled, stepped across the road into a brown field and hurried off toward the woods. I watched until he disappeared. I started the tractor again and drove off into the rest of my life. That's called Incident. And I'm not even going to read any more from there. I'm just going to finish with one piece, okay? Ah, David. Yeah, wonderful person. And this is a prose poem of mine. And it's called As Autumn Approaches on Wheeler Hill. And again, autumn is my favorite season. And Wheeler Hill, you know, hills of New York, right up on top of a hill, distant views. I mentioned the star Capella in here. Anyone into the stars in that, the constellations? Capella is a star in the constellation Auriga. And here's another name I'm going to throw out. Henry Beston, naturalist writer, Henry Beston. He wrote a classic nature book called The Outermost House, which is about living in a cabin on the outer Cape Cod for a whole year in the 1920s. And it was a national historic site even, but it got washed away eventually. But a wonderful classic book. One of the lines in there, creation is here and now. You know, it's continual. It's all, and just a beautiful, it's a prose book, but very poetic. Anyway, he mentioned in another book of his called Northern Farm. He lived up in Maine. And I got to sleep in his house. I did a 3-week journey along the coast of Maine. And I tried to find Henry's house. He died in 1962. And one, you know, back in the 80s, I couldn't find it. It's way up in the hills, a little more southern Maine, mid-coast Maine. And then when I started to plan this 3-week journey along the coast of Maine, I knew who was living in his house, who was caretaking it. It was another poet who I had met a couple of times in the past, Gary Lawless. And I ended up writing to Gary. I said, hey, Gary, I'm doing this 3-week journey, and I would love to visit the farm, you know, see where Henry lived. And he said, hey, why don't you come and stay overnight? So I got to sleep in the, you know, I spent a wonderful evening, night, next morning, and I got to sleep in the bed, and next to the bed was Henry's typewriter. It's like, wow, that was very moving. And then the next morning, Gary left to, he runs a bookstore too, and his wife left to go to work, and I wandered around a little bit alone before I had to leave. And just as I left, there's a long field that slopes down to Damariscotta Pond, a big pond that they bordered on. And just as I was leaving, a loon called out. Yes. So anyway, that's a long thing. Capella is mentioned in Northern Farm. When Henry Beston, he wrote, when I see Capella rising over the barn in the northeast, I know autumn is soon to follow. And then I mentioned some of the Chinese and Japanese poets that I've been influenced by. As autumn approaches on Wheeler Hill, oak bench, open fire, lamp light, wine glass, poems of Yang Wan Li. Beyond flames, cool air, cold stars. Nearest neighbor out of view. Who is there to share this moment with me? Yang Wan Li would pour wine, chant poems. So too, Han Shan, Dao Qian, Zhu Teng Po. The far light of a car, miles away down in the valley, catches my eye. Distant, the dust of the world, distant, distant, the poets whose hearts are like mine. Capella rises in the northeast, autumn soon to follow. A great horned owl calls out beyond western woods. What a poem that is. Heaven, my blanket, earth, my pillow. The words of Yang Wan Li reverberate as I gaze up at late summer constellations, think of the coming season. Dao retired at age 40, grew rice and vegetables, wrote poems, drank wine. Han Shan lived in a cave at Cold Mountain, writing poems on walls. Zhu Teng Po, in exile, the poet of the eastern slope. From where we will soon build our house, I gaze at endless rows of hills. Staying put, traveling far, what difference does it make? Basho walked the back roads of Japan, writing prose and haiku. I think of the granite coast of Maine. Who is it will walk there with me, writing poems, sipping wine as we go? A gust of wind kicks up from the west. A few leaves tumble near fire. I blow out lamp, close book, walk off to bed. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.